Eventually, he will have a better delivery system. And if that happens, we can't allow it to happen.
President Trump says China is helping with North Korea. It's Monday, May 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online right now at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, strong words for North Korea at the United Nations. Thailand's militant problem. Thousands march for climate change. There's new hope for premature babies. Stay with us. We're just getting started with today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says he would not be happy if North Korea conducts another nuclear test, which would be its sixth. Asked if, quote, not happy with another Pyongyang nuclear test meant he would undertake military action against the regime of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, Trump said,
I just don't want to discuss it. And I think you know me very well, where you've asked me many times over the last couple of years about military. I said we shouldn't be announcing we're going into Mosul. I said we shouldn't be announcing all our moves. It is a chess game. I just don't want people to know what my thinking is. So eventually he will have a better delivery system. And if that happens, we can't allow it to happen.
The United States and South Korea Sunday completed their annual large-scale military drills, which involved 20,000 South Korean troops and 10,000 U.S. forces. But the two countries continued their joint naval exercise in the Sea of Japan that Pyongyang has condemned as a provocation in preparation for an attack on North Korea. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has been tracking the latest developments and joins us with more.
Donald Trump made a very interesting claim just a few hours ago on national television. He claimed that, in fact, China's persistent devaluations of its currency have already ended, that they ended during the campaign, and that it was his rhetoric during the campaign that sent the message to Beijing, and Beijing acted as a result of what he was saying during the campaign. I will leave it to other minds to say whether that is true or not. I think that there's a healthy amount of skepticism about that claim here in Washington. But nevertheless, China has definitely gone from the whipping boy during the campaign to not necessarily an ally of Donald Trump, but sort of in the realm of the enemy of my enemy must be my friend.
And I think on the economic front, he has learned that it's a very complicated relationship between the United States and China.
In addition to individual things, I mean, America sells a fair number of automobiles to China, would love to sell more in addition to airplanes and all sorts of things. There are questions, long-term questions concerning intellectual property, what gets stolen. But let's not forget that China holds trillions of dollars of U.S. debt and that, in essence, the United States is able to sustain its indebtedness and its chronic inability to put its financial house in order, thanks to the fact that China year after year snaps up and purchases America's debt. China is the biggest holder of U.S. debt, and I suspect that so long as that is the case, that China will have a certain amount of sway. Not to mention the fact that it is among the biggest market of consumers out there. And certainly you do not want to pursue policies where you are cutting yourself off to well over a billion people.
Well, you want to talk about protectionism. A lot of people have accused Donald Trump of being a protectionist. China is probably one of the biggest protectionist markets out there. So many international companies, particularly from the United States, have complained about being able to do business in China. It is so difficult from the rules and regulations and whether or not, you know, the Chinese even want products from the outside. China has made a few superficial moves, investments in the United States. Jack Ma of Alibaba reached out to Donald Trump and suggested that perhaps his company can sell some food from the Midwest back to China or at least to Asia markets. So there is a little bit of movement there.
There is. The relationship between Washington and Beijing has been complicated for a very long time. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember when, in fact, Nixon opened the door between these two countries. And certainly, I mean, while China has opened itself up to the trappings of capitalism, officially it is still a communist state and it maintains very strict controls over the means of production. So the relationship has always been complicated. And just in geostrategic terms, China is a country that has been economically growing by leaps and bounds for a very long time. I suspect that it feels that it can exert a certain amount of influence on the world stage. It is very much of a rising power, and no one should be surprised that in certain realms that there are going to be challenges that arise between the United States and China.
And of course, we haven't even touched anything like the South China Sea.
This brings up a whole list of questions. I mean, if Donald Trump is banking on China to bring down the hammer on North Korea and really force it to change its ways, beyond whether or not China is a currency manipulator, does this mean that the United States looks the other way in the South China Sea? Does this mean that the United States mutes the voice that it has had in recent years concerning China's human rights conditions? To just how far does this accommodation go? And I suspect that that will be determined by what China is actually able to accomplish in North Korea. Clearly, the Trump administration is giving Beijing a certain amount of rope to deal with. But I suspect that if it proves to be fruitless, that rope will be retracted.
As they say, stay tuned. We'll be back next week with further developments. Michael Bowman is our VOA Senate correspondent. Thank you so much, Michael.
Always a pleasure.
So many different facets to this story, which you can follow by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Trump says he would not be happy with another North Korea nuclear test. Duterte to ASEAN leaders, be resolute in realizing a drug-free ASEAN. The Philippines says notorious Abu Sayyaf kidnapper is dead. Growth slows in April in China's manufacturing sector. China deports a U.S. citizen convicted of espionage. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says Washington would not rule out a military response to future North Korean aggression and that it would seek to increase the rogue nation's financial and international isolation. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations, where the secretary chaired a meeting of the Security Council on the North Korean issue.
The 7,932nd meeting of the Security Council is called to order.
The U.S. Secretary of State made his U.N. debut, delivering a strong warning to North Korea that, in his words, all options remain on the table.
Diplomatic and financial levers of power will be backed up by a willingness to counteract North Korean aggression with military action, if necessary. We much prefer a negotiated solution to this problem, but we are committed to defending ourselves and our allies against North Korean aggression.
Tillerson said the U.S. would apply intensified pressure on North Korea, including new international sanctions. But he insisted that the U.S. does not want regime change. He added that talks would not happen before Pyongyang takes concrete steps to dismantle its nuclear weapons program.
We will not reward their bad behavior with talks. We will only engage in talks with North Korea when they exhibit a good faith commitment to abiding by the Security Council resolutions, and their past promises to end their nuclear programs.
President Donald Trump has called on China to help resolve the crisis. But China's foreign minister appeared to try to lower expectations of Beijing.
China is not a focal point of the problem on the peninsula, and the key to solving the nuclear issue on the peninsula does not lie in the hands of the Chinese side. China has, over the years, made unremitting efforts and played a unique role in promoting a negotiated solution of the...
He echoed Tillerson's call for Pyongyang to end its nuclear and ballistic missile activities and return to international commitments. He also called on other parties to constructively work for the denuclearization of the peninsula. South Korea sent its foreign minister to lobby council members to ratchet up the pressure, warning of Pyongyang's growing capability and intent to use its weapons.
In order to avoid this nightmarish scenario, we must act now. We are racing against time.
The pressure is now on the international community to implement existing sanctions, including the toughest ones adopted last year. New Security Council sanctions are unlikely anytime soon unless North Korea conducts another nuclear test or a significant ballistic missile launch. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Happening now in Asia, a U.S. cybersecurity firm believes state-sponsored Chinese hackers tried to infiltrate an organization connected to a U.S.-built missile system in South Korea that Beijing firmly opposes. South Korea says there was an attempted cyber attack last month. China says it opposes any form of cyber attack. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thailand's military in the southern border provinces is on high alert to violence on the 13th anniversary of a wave of insurgent attacks that included the deaths of 32 insurgents inside a mosque. The increased security comes as the Thai government is pressing on with informal peace talks with several militant groups amid a spike in violence in recent months. The 2004 bloodshed came just 3 months after a resurgent militancy started in the largely Muslim southern border provinces. Since then, 6,500 lives have been lost. Panattan Watanayagorn is an analyst and advisor to the Thai Deputy Prime Minister and says security has been stepped up to coincide with the anniversary of the 2004 attacks.
Moving into the important anniversaries of some of these local events, the security forces are now instructed to step up their measures to make sure that peace and stability are secured in the area.
Militant attacks have focused on the symbols of the Thai state, officials, and school teachers. More than 150 teachers have died in the violence, but the toll has included Muslims, the beheading of Buddhists, and arson attacks on schools. Thailand is largely Buddhist, but with a majority of Muslims in the southern provinces. The latest milestones in peace talks launched in 2015 are an agreement on safe zones in largely urban areas. Panattan said the informal talks are making progress, with the government open to meeting with all insurgent groups.
The peace talk is on schedule in the south and now moving into a more difficult period. After getting technical measures and building up trucks, they are able now to sit down and work out the new mapping of the more secure areas.
Outside the negotiations are militants under the National Revolutionary Front and the main instigators of increasing attacks in recent months. In early April, the Organization of Islamic Conference at a summit in Turkey lent its support to the Thai efforts in pressing on with dialogue. An official statement by the conference also called for Muslim communities in the south to include all stakeholders and to work for the common good to ensure a peace process can be effectively realized in the south. Pakorn Priyakorn, president of the Islamic Center of Thailand, called for a greater role of Thai civilian and academics in the negotiation process.
You need to put some people who are very keen on dealing with this type of conflicts. Sometimes when you use those from the army, for example, they are not very keen on in terms of dealing with the peace talk. So in this sense, we need to have some more people who know the real situation.
Our thanks to Ron Corbin in Bangkok for bringing us this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Two Taiwanese hikers continue to recover after being missing in Nepal for almost 7 weeks. One of the three died just days before help arrived. After losing their bearings in a remote area, they fell 100 meters off of a cliff into a ravine and then took shelter in a small cave. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, China's export growth has accelerated, increasing over 16% compared to early 2016, while import growth, fueled by oil, copper, iron ore, coal, and soybeans, remains strong in the world's second-largest economy. Chief Economist Shane Oliver of the Sydney-based AMP Capital tells VOA's Victor Beatty the good news may signal a revival in global economic activity.
We saw earlier, a month or so ago, that export numbers out of China actually went backwards in the month of February, but that, of course, has reversed in the month of March, with exports rising 16%, which I guess is consistent with China's trading partners doing reasonably well and obviously being in a position to demand Chinese goods. And on the flip side, Chinese imports remained very strong, growing by 20%, albeit not as strong as the almost unbelievable 38% number that was reported in the previous month. So basic trade situation in China looks reasonably favourable, which I think is consistent with continued reasonable growth coming out of China.
Well, after several quarters of lackluster performance, what's changed?
Always hard to know why these numbers bounce around as much as they do. I think part of it relates to obviously what's going on in Chinese export markets, but I think also a big part of it is, particularly around this time of year, that the Chinese New Year holiday, which of course floats around, unlike the calendar year holiday in most Western countries around Christmas and New Year, so the Lunar New Year sort of flips between January and February, and it can cause distortions in both of those months. So perhaps I guess there's a case to sort of treat the volatility you often see around January and February with a bit of caution, but I suspect that may have been a factor boosting the import numbers we saw in February and depressing the export numbers. Maybe the truth is sort of in between the extremes, but basic picture seems to be that Chinese trade numbers are doing reasonably well.
Shane, what do you make of the recent U.S.-China summit and comments Wednesday by President Trump that indicated that the chemistry between the two leaders of the two biggest economies are really quite good?
Well, I think what we're hearing from President Trump and also from China is actually quite positive. After the U.S. election back in November, there was a big fear that the U.S. and China were about to embark on a trade war triggered by President Trump. And of course, we've seen no such thing. And if anything, President Trump seems to have moderated his stance. There seems to be now a willingness to cooperate on both sides to work out ways to improve the trade situation that the US faces. And of course, we've heard recently that President Trump has said that he won't name China a currency manipulator, which I think is a good thing. I think if he had named China a currency manipulator, not only would it have violated the tests that the U.S. Treasury uses to determine whether a currency or a country is a currency manipulator, but it would also have escalated tensions with China. But I think coming out of the summit they had in Florida, the impression I get is that they're working towards cooperating with each other rather than embarking on some sort of trade conflict.
But the trade imbalance with the United States increased last month after last year finished with China's trade surplus standing at $350 billion. Shane Oliver said China will have to improve its import of more U.S. goods and services to ease U.S. concerns about it. Meanwhile, the World Bank kept its 2017 growth forecast for developing East Asia and the Pacific unchanged, including China at 6.2%, a slight decline from 2016. It also expects China's economy to expand by 6.5% this year and 6.3% in 2018. Developing at this hour in Asia, new numbers show China's growth in manufacturing slowed in April, pointing to an unsteady recovery in the world's second largest economy. A National Bureau of Statistics statistician noted sluggish growth in market demand and supply, slower expansion in imports and exports. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, thousands of people rallied in Washington on Saturday for the People's Climate March. Organizers say they hope the day's events would send a clear message to the Trump administration and lawmakers in Washington about their climate policies. VOA's Elizabeth Chernoff has more on the march and the issue, which has had much discussion during the president's first 100 days in office.
Under a blazing sun, concerned citizens took to the streets of Washington, marching down Pennsylvania Avenue toward the White House, protesting against the Trump administration's stance on climate change. This just 24 hours after the president signed an executive order aimed at expanding offshore drilling, saying it would benefit American workers and families.
Our country is blessed with incredible natural resources, including abundant offshore oil and natural gas reserves. This executive order starts the process of opening offshore areas to job-creating energy exploration. It reverses the previous administration's Arctic leasing ban.
That reversal is not sitting well with the president's critics, who say the administration's pledge to drill for oil will hurt the environment.
We will rise up! We will rise up!
Organizers of today's People's Climate March labeled the event a nationwide call for, quote, climate jobs and justice. For many activists, the demonstrations represented a larger symbol of resistance on the president's 100th day in office. Others hope the march will serve as a greater call to action.
Urgent. We need to do something now. It's important to live.
If something isn't done, the stakes are enormous because they're talking about more pollution that's going to put more pollution in the air, like arsenic and mercury, in our water, and that affects the air our kids breathe and the water they drink.
A message from the global community delivered directly to the administration and to this country's lawmakers.
Keep it in the soil! Keep it in the soil!
Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News, Washington.
Every year, an estimated 15 million babies are born prematurely. It's believed 1 million children die around the world each year because of complications of preterm birth. VOA's Kevin Enix reports researchers at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia may have developed some new technology that could completely change that outlook.
This baby lamb has been living inside this artificial womb for 3 to 4 weeks. Researchers hope that this biobag, as they are calling it, may someday help the lungs and organs of premature humans develop normally, even if they are born as early as 23 to 27 weeks into a normal 37-week pregnancy.
They have to be put on ventilators in incubators at a time when their lungs really are not ready to breathe air yet. So these researchers decided to kind of go back to Mother Nature and mimic mom's uterus with a fluid-filled container that preemies could be put into and take in amniotic fluid, a substitute for amniotic fluid, the way that they would in the womb.
A machine attached to the lamb's umbilical cord provides oxygen and takes away carbon dioxide. This is an entirely new technology, so it's a long way from here to the potential to help the estimated 15 million babies born prematurely every year.
Now, there are no long-term data on these animals, but what they did find was that they appeared to grow normally. They were able to watch them over this period grow wool, even. And when they examined their organs later, they did appear to be comparable to lambs of that older gestational age of the time when they would have come out of that container.
The hope is that the biobag might provide a safe space for premature babies to develop in a more natural way, even though they are outside the mother's womb. Human testing is still 3 to 5 years away, but the researchers are already talking to U.S. regulators about making the technology available to hospitals. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
And like so many of our reports, you can see Kevin's video on our website at voanews.com. There are many ways to get VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, streaming on our website at voanews.com. And we'd like to welcome today our latest affiliate, Voice of Chungjung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungjung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Aiden Utku, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden and intern Sandra Young, who ran our Facebook Live today. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day.